Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm here. I'm Dr. Lisa. Thanks for listening. I give a shit. I give a shit about you, you people out there on a... It's going to be spring soon. I know we're all devastated. Our heart, I think I'm feeling the pain, and I know you sensitive people that listen to this station do too, about the whole immigration thing. It's terrible. You know what I was saying the other day? I was saying that I was thinking, you know, they're like, we're all born on this planet. We're all born here. It's this tiny planet in the middle of this huge, huge universe. So, like, the only immigrants, like, could be from Mars or some other planet. The idea of immigrants is absurd. And I am so thrilled about my guest today. I have the lovely, lovely Sharon Spell.
Hi, Lisa.
And I am really excited because I went to see this really great comedy show with Julio Torres on Tuesday night at UCB East. And Sharon is,
I'm a bartender there.
Is that? But yeah. You seem like you don't do any managing. You seem like you're in charge there.
I seem like I'm in charge, but I'm not in charge.
That's because you're just more mature. I get it.
I can answer questions, but I'm not in charge. I'm happy to not be in charge.
But yeah, is that right?
I guess. I'm happy to help as much as I can.
Yeah, you absolutely.
I can be in charge.
Anyway, if I needed something, you'd be first on the list if I was
and
there.
And then I would help direct you in the right to the right person.
If there's a fire, if I'm there and there's a fire,
I can help with that. I can help with the exits and stop, drop, and roll.
I'm going to be there.
And maybe
there.
Something else.
I'm going to be, you're my person when I'm there during the the big fire.
It will not catch on fire, by the way. It has passed fire inspection recently.
Oh, really? That's good. See, you know that. See, that's what I'm saying.
I know things.
I just want to make sure that I remind you guys to listen to this station. This is such an incredible station. I got to tell you something. We are growing. We are growing so fast. So you should always listen to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. They have amazing variety of shows. And you can also donate money and become part of the Radio Free Brooklyn family on our Patreon page. Just go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. Also, if you would like to call in today and talk to either me or Sharon, or maybe we'll inspire you, we would love to hear from you. That's all. And Sharon's head is, I should know the number, but Sharon, your head is blocking the number.
My head or my hair?
Oh, no, there's the phone. Oh, there it is, 718-928-9732. That's 718-928-9732. You're good. You're good, Sharon, so don't worry about it.
Small head, big hair.
So I want to, you know, Sharon is, if you don't know who she is, and if you know anything about comedy, you know Sharon. She's been around and done a lot of stuff and had a lot of different shows, right?
Yeah.
But right now, I think she seems to be focused mostly on your podcast. Is that right? Tell us a little bit about it.
It's called The Sharon Spell Show. It's available on iTunes and SoundCloud. It's produced by Grumpy Films. We're at episode 124 that was released a couple weeks ago. 125 is coming up soon.
Wow.
As of the date of this recording.
Wow. How many years is that?
I would say like 4 or 5 years. We were releasing one a week for a while and then switched to Grumpy Films Production Company.
So that's a
Grumpy
film distribution company?
Yeah. They historically have made comedy shorts and in the last few years have branched out to have different podcasts and live productions.
Fabulous.
As well as video.
So you got help. You got production
help. It's great to ask for help.
Did you ask for help?
I asked them for help, and they said, we would love to help. Quote, unquote.
Oh, my God. I already had my therapy session right here. That was worth $150 right there.
I get paid? No.
No, that my shrink would have gone. But I don't go. I only go to group now. I can't afford
But the
it.
Previous production company, Cool Super Cool, was a podcast collective. They downsized, and that was Dave Steffi, who helped get the ball rolling with my podcast, which then they, yeah, they downsized. So I already had something to present to Grumpy and said, like, look, this is very low production effort, but a great product.
That's our competition. but that makes me grumpy.
No, but there's
they have you.
But you can also listen. It's about a 30-minute podcast.
Yeah,
plus
it is
or minus.
A shorter podcast.
That's the true. Real selling
well, I
point.
Listened to the one. I listened to the one with Joe Pera.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because I wanted to have some background.
Yeah.
Since you were going to be here, and so who was the person who did a lot of the talking? That wasn't Joe Pera, was it? The guy who was like the film producer guy. Who is that guy?
If I had different co-hosts, then that was...
Yeah, it was like two co-hosts, Joe Pera and this other guy, I think.
Yeah. When the show first started, there were four co-hosts.
Uh-huh.
And little by little, it became apparent with the time crunch of having a 30-minute format.
Four co-hosts. We can't even do that in group therapy.
Because I was thinking it would be like a radio show, like everybody chime in and have fun,
right?
Style, but then the guests ended up not getting to talk as much.
Oh yeah, what about that? And then a guest, you really front loaded that.
So
not a dull moment on that show.
So the more recent episodes are a guest and me.
Oh yeah, well. I'm going to say this, like, I know you're great, Joe Pera. That guy was annoying. The guy was a little annoying.
Well.
That's okay, though.
That's okay.
It's okay.
It's part
I'm
of the history.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or no, well, is honest, is that bad? Am I insulting you?
You're not insulting me. Here's
okay.
the thing. It's all part of the history. It's part
right.
of what got me to here right now
right.
on your show. And this is going to lead to the next thing and the next thing. And it's all just like,
yeah.
it's part of the narrative.
Well, that's what's so weird because I'm dealing with the same thing myself because obviously some shows are better than others. Like this will be a good one because we're
hope.
Comfortable. But, you know, sometimes like the one I had last week was very difficult because it was, and, you know, if like somebody's going to judge me on, and it was really the circumstances because I had Casey James Salango. You
yeah.
know him?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had him on and he called in because he couldn't come in. And we wanted to also set him up on a blind date. So I learned there. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
did
and
you set
him
up?
Casey's great.
Yeah.
You know, we love Casey.
Yes. He's
and
a sweet guy.
I can't believe he's single. Can you? He's hot.
Yeah. Well, I was single for a long time.
Yeah. That's
I'm
true.
Hot.
And you're
but...
hot.
I mean, hot or not, you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, is a pot without a lid. What can you do?
Yeah, and you guys, you it's, comedy it's, people are out at,
I'll
at,
tell you
out
this.
At night, late, every
yeah,
night.
Yeah, and know. For a long time when I was single, I would go to bed and give thanks that I was safe, nobody was hurting me, that, you know, I'm taking care of myself, like
yeah.
I'm not with the wrong person.
Yeah. I'm
so it's really
that.
Glorious to be single and not with the wrong person.
So great. It's so great that feeling of being able to take care of yourself.
So go
as,
Casey.
As a woman. Yeah.
Casey for not being with the wrong person.
Yeah, no, he was way more mature. Do you know him well? I don't know.
I've done some shows with him. I'm all, you know, happy
he's
to see him.
So much more mature than I expected. It was actually a little disappointing because it threw me off. It wasn't that maybe that's what I'm really upset about. He was way too mature. Much more mature than I am.
Work on that, Casey.
Yeah, work on being an idiot. Work on being just a stupid idiot guy.
Please don't.
You're not.
Please don't.
So, you know what I was thinking? I actually had a... I am feeling really comfortable with you, which is great. I didn't know cool. I was going to. But I had a moment that was group therapy worthy with you on Tuesday night. Did you notice that?
No.
See, this is what stuck in my head. So I thought it would be, I usually do therapy. I'm the one doing therapy. But you have also had a show called Talk Therapy. Do you still do that?
That, I've been on Talk Therapy. That's,
show where you had people like tell stories about their, a storytelling show?
I can see her sweet face and I cannot think of her name.
Cambry?
No.
It was at QED.
Lori Baird. That is Lori Baird's show at QED. And I have been on it several times.
Oh.
Yes.
I got it.
People do get up and talk about issues related to a topic that she picks and like things that they've overcome.
Ah, so you've been on the
therapy.
Show.
I've been
a bunch
on the show. I've been in therapy. I've been on the show.
And are you in therapy now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How long have you been in therapy?
About 3 years. Like shortly after I quit drinking, I started therapy.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
How is that related?
Fortunately, the right information got to me because I had checked in about therapy for a while, especially like in 2011, my parents died. Mm-hmm. A year after that, I started group therapy. Hospice of New York offers bereavement group therapy for free. Check into it. It's in Long Island City, not far from the Creek in the Cave. And it was really great to go in a group setting and listen to other people who are feeling the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And
did your parents die at the same time?
In the same month. We can like put a pin in that because that's... That's another story.
Yeah, but, right.
But then in 2000...
But separately.
Separate causes, 18 days apart.
Yeah,
they've been married 53 years.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, okay.
So it was... And they were...
And look at you now. You're bright and shining.
Well, the pendulum swings both ways.
You've got... Yeah, you went into third.
And so we all have choices.
You took action. Good.
Like the rest of this roller coaster ride, I can keep my eyes shut or I can open them.
No, good for you. So how did you wind up stopping drinking?
I woke up one morning with an epiphany, wake up dummy, you're missing it. Because I was still drinking heavily based on sad practices from when I was sad in my marriage.
Oh, did you drink when you
heavily.
Were, when you were married?
Yeah.
And
I drank socially too heavily at times when, you know, before that. And then when things got more and more hopeless in the marriage, I was hoping I wouldn't wake up. And then that can easily continue in comedy because we get paid in drink tickets for the most part.
Oh, my God.
People, you know, it's a social currency. And I would also drink at home privately. So I would drink socially with people, go home and continue and be surprised I woke up in the morning.
But were you aware of what you were doing?
Yeah.
Were you thinking about it? Were you just like, I'm going to just drown this?
Yeah.
Or...
And then I woke up and I realized, wait, I'm in New York. He's not bothering me anymore. He's not hurting me anymore. I'm here safe in an apartment I can pay for. And I'm living my dream and I'm making art and I'm on shows. And I'm still drowning myself for nothing.
Ah, because
it's a past issue.
The problems were gone.
Yeah. And I realized, like, my cage has changed.
Oh.
Like,
yeah,
the lab
yeah,
rat study.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't change the cage. Don't, what is it instead of, like, yeah, it's not the rat. It's the cage, the boring cage.
Yeah, and I realized
cage.
That it was, little by little over the years, my cage, you know, the door was open. And I could be where I was now, happy. I could be happy and stop putting a depressant into my system every day.
Right, yeah. So you just stopped drinking altogether?
It took some time to get my bearings with it.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't try AA at first. And I actually still haven't been to AA. I'm not necessarily against it. I just haven't.
It's not but, you didn't use it.
Right. But when, like by the third day was the first time I had my first big trigger, which I did a friend's podcast, and this friend knew me when I lived in Pittsburgh and was married, and he ended up asking about ex-husband, and in talking about it, it brought all that toxic stuff up to the surface, and I left there and thought, I just want to get two bottles of wine and go home and drink myself to sleep and not wake up. But I was like...
So that was a trigger.
Well, but I decided to give myself a chance and just try one different thing, do one thing differently in the pattern of buying alcohol and going home. So I went to a Starbucks and got a coffee and sat there and drank it for an hour.
Oh.
And I was like, after this, then I'll go get wine.
Oh, that's so smart.
So
did you think of that yourself?
It came to me. I'm not sure if I had seen it somewhere in the ether.
It made sense to you.
But
it
at
was
that
what
moment,
you did.
But during that time, a friend texted me and said, hey, I'm in your neighborhood. Do you want to grab dinner? And that friend was not drinking because of antibiotics.
Mm.
So I ended up not drinking that night.
Oh. And did you feel much better?
I felt better in
the
morning.
You woke up in the morning and you're like, I feel good.
It's like I woke up instead of coming to.
Yeah.
You know? It's like to fall asleep instead of passing out, wake up
it's
instead of come to.
It's such an easy pattern
it
to
feels
fall
amazing.
Into drinking. Yeah. Drinking. It's a really easy.
Yeah. Moment. And you don't realize, I didn't realize really to the bad degree it was. I knew and I didn't know. Mm-hmm. We can balance two, you know, totally different thoughts in our brains at one point.
Well, if we're smart enough, yeah.
Well, I'm working on it.
So you know what? I was gonna point out this. Like I had. If I don't usually ask for therapy, but I'm gonna ask. Uh-oh. Is that okay? So I had this moment with you that you didn't realize. Obviously, I mean, why would you? Because it's my Michigas. But when I invited you to be on the show, like I just walked in and I was like, I had it in my head, I really want somebody good on the show, probably run into somebody at a comedy place. And then the first thing I saw was you, and I was like, Sharon's perfect. So the way that I approached you, you said, I remember what you said to me. You said, why is there, like, I was asking you to be on my show, but in such a way, like, being on my show was almost like, will you come clean my bathroom for me? And you replied by saying something, why, is there something wrong with it?
Yeah, because you asked, and then you were like, really? Like, like you had asked me, like, would you do a live porn on my streaming web show, please? Sure, I'm Sharon Spell. That's my brand. Really?
So
you asked me to be on your show. What do we say to when we're asked to be on a show? We say yes.
Well,
if we're available.
No, but
like,
I
scheduling.
Always, you know, I mean, like, you know, I'm always like, oh, Sharon's busy or every, you know, people are busy. So I was sort of like, but it just showed how, it just shows my self-esteem issues. You pointed it out by saying, you know, by questioning me.
Well.
Which is great.
But
great.
We all
thank
have
that.
That. I have many moments. Everybody has those moments.
Do you feel
of,
that way about getting people to be on your show?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But then I have so much fun when I do it that I look at it like I want other people to come play. It's like play dates.
So you feel good about what you're, or you
yeah.
just, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
but
good.
Also,
I gotta...
the Grumpy Films guys, Jason and Daniel, also make it fun. So like.
Are you producers?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow, you producers. Yeah.
But they make it fun and they make it like work really well.
Yeah,
so it is fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is.
I used to do things more on my own, and it was oppressive and scary. And then you start to doubt yourself a lot.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But you know, it's so great being part of the station. I mean, it's a great thing because it's been almost 2 years that I've been involved, that I've had this show, and I'm really involved with the community of the station, which is a community.
Yeah.
So I. I've gotten a lot of confidence just by being
great.
Part of it. Yeah,
it has that feel to it. Just coming in here and the people who are exiting, it's
yeah.
very friendly, very
like
communal.
We're family.
Yeah.
We're family.
Cool.
Yeah. But, you know, it's really funny because I have, this is something that's really hard for me to talk about, but I was thinking, well, you would be a good person to talk to about. So I feel really awkward at comedy shows.
Yeah. Most of us do.
Really? Because yeah. When I show up, I feel like people think, oh, there's that hanger-on. She wishes she was a real, yeah. was a comedian. She does some weird psychotherapy thing. She's so old. I don't care about that. I try not to care about that. But that's not even it. There, I can't even talk about that. But I'm just like, why is she here?
Right.
Why is she here? She's like just, ugh.
Yeah, I feel
do
that way.
Do you feel that way?
But, oh, yeah.
But you're, like, really part of that community.
Because I don't leave the party. That's the thing. It's like,
what do you
I want to still be at the party, and then other people leave, and they're like, oh, wait, we need somebody, and I'm still there. Like, the way to stay in show business a long time is just don't quit. And I feel like, you know, I do love it. I love the party. I love the craft. I love... the mm-hmm. celebration of humor mm-hmm.
and, you're
and
part
the truth telling of it. I love all of the
you're
aspects.
Part of the best. That's my, like really, I mean, as far as like, you know, borderline mainstream places, I love that place. UCB
yeah.
East. I like it better than the other one, even though the other one is probably more.
Well, there's a chance to hang out and make eye contact with people and socialize at UCB East Village. The Chelsea location doesn't have that. Set up
yeah,
because there's no lobby.
But I feel more comfortable there.
But it's a different, You feel more comfortable at Chelsea?
No.
At the Beast?
Yeah.
I love Chelsea.
Chelsea seems like Chelsea it's always more young guys. Young guys
I think it's
way
young
too
guys
serious. Way too serious about it.
I love Chelsea, but I work at the Beast, and I'm so fortunate that I've worked there since it opened.
Yeah.
And it opened the month after my parents died, and I got the best email because I came back to New York from Mississippi, devastated, barely able to get out of bed. My previous job, babysitting, they had moved to Rochester.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know what I was going to do. And I got this email out of the blue from Austin Rodriguez, and he asked, hey, would you like to bartend at the East Village location when it opens?
Oh, that must
and
have felt great.
Yes. Please, I needed somewhere to be. I needed alcohol, and I needed somewhere to be. And
so what's it like working there? Do you feel like part of that family? You must.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a job, but I look at it like, you know, I love the people. I love comedy.
Right.
And I feel like it's just a way to, like, love people. And that's something I'm working on, because when I started working there, I was not in a place where I could actively love people because I was so hurt
by
my parents' deaths and my divorce and.
Was your divorce around the time?
It was before that. So
less than a year, say?
We separated in 2008. The divorce became final at the very end of 2009. So 2010, I'm still adjusting to stuff. And then my parents died the next year.
Wow.
So I'm barely walking with, land legs again. And then my parents were my person more than my husband.
You were really close to them.
At the end, we were closer than ever. And I could really talk to my dad more than ever before. And then they were gone. And then all of a sudden I'm in a comedy venue with people who didn't go through a devastating loss. And it was like my own personal, my Twin Towers were gone.
Wow.
And nobody else knew that except my siblings, who also lost their towers.
Yeah, right.
And we had different relationships with our parents, but we each lost them the same way. So coming back to New York, working in comedy, I didn't have a lot to give because I didn't know, I could barely get out of bed. But little by little, working at UCB East Village has given me that sense of community where I've grown and healed, and also getting sober, getting in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's made me able to give back,
mm-hmm,
and be open and magnanimous and love the work more.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because having this feeling of community with this radio station, similar to what you're describing, has been like incredibly grounding for me. I never felt like that, when I worked in advertising. It was very destabilizing, and I never felt like I was welcome there, or that that people were on my side, that we were doing anything together. I don't think most people feel that way, but in advertising.
Yeah.
But so especially when you're doing something creative, because it is really hard to create alone all the time without any support.
Yeah.
But I'm also surprised to hear you say that. Do you think a lot of comedians feel self-conscious comedy shows?
Yeah.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Well,
why is
you
that?
Learn like coping skills to mask
but why
it.
Why do they you guys perform, I had a brief foray where I had comedians on I did a show where I had comedians on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've taken a run at stand-up and stuff like that. But, I'm not that person. But I see, it seems to me like people like you and other people who are on shows regularly wouldn't feel that way.
You figure out ways to, cope. One of my favorite things to remind myself, my friend Jenny Benford in Pittsburgh gave me a great one. People want to like you more than they want to not like you.
Mm. But that's a coping strategy. What I'm surprised about is that people feel that way. Do you think all comedians feel that way?
I think there's something in us that makes us get on stage and share our privacy with other people, like our private observations and our thoughts. There's something about us that needs to be heard and understood that makes us get up there in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I guess there's a feeling of competition in any creative
group. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about I had like a bunch of things that I was thinking about, because I was wondering if women comedians do better in comedy if they've had athletics in their background.
Interesting, because I don't have it. I mean, the most I have is like band, marching season.
Band,
is,
but it's still a team.
Yeah,
thing,
and I was in the color
right?
guard. Yeah, with flags.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're much less likely to take things personally.
Right, but never say never. I find ways to take things personally. Not as much as in the past, but like sometimes things hit you harder than you think they're going to.
Yeah.
I think everybody deals with that.
I also think that there's a really there's an upside to taking things personally, which really is just another way to translate for being responsible, because
sure.
then you're going to get a lot more done if you're like, I'm going to take charge of this. This is my thing. This is my fault. And I think besides the anxiety, it does actually help you. But another thing I was thinking about is, because a lot of times when I've done therapy, sometimes, you know, what I call therapy on with comedians, I am in this, I wonder about interpreting their comedy. How much of comedians do you think are really talking about themselves on stage, and how many are hiding behind their act?
You mean like character performers?
Well, or? Characters or like what do you think that they do? You know, even a lot of people write jokes and they say, I did this, I did that, and it's not true, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you think that's true or not?
I think maybe most of the people I admire are speaking their personal truths.
Mm-hmm.
Like in crafting things that really happened to them. Like Patton Oswalt and, I'm trying to think, Ali Wong's
mm-hmm.
Baby Cobra is really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, the true stories are the best and the ones that resonate. And I think, like, huh. I'm not really sure.
It's interesting. Well, any... like Julio. You saw Julio,
I didn't
right?
actually get in to see it. Like, people
man.
Were coming out telling me about it and stuff.
It got a great response, right? It was so original.
Yeah.
Well.
I love Julio.
Yeah. I mean, he's
I have
somebody...
one of his diamonds.
You do.
I have one.
You're so
yes.
lucky.
I have a diamond.
He's been on the show, actually. He's great.
He's a
huge fan. Yeah. And he's the nicest person.
Yep.
But Julio's kind of in a, like, one of the things that I love about Julio, and I really like that kind of comedy, because there's such a fantasy element. Like, it may not be that personal about him in specifically, but it does give you, you feel like, you're playing dolls with him. You feel like you're like 8 years old and you're playing a game of dolls.
Wonderful.
And I think his work is very close to performance art.
Yes.
Have you heard?
But I think that's also his truth. And I think that's, I don't,
right.
is that what you're getting at? That his is not necessarily verbatim, like I'm Julio and here's my deal.
It feels really intimate, but intimate in the way that, If like you and I started pretending we were like 8 years old and we brought out our Barbies mm-hmm. and then like really bought into it, like we could do that if we
sure.
really wanted to. Maybe that's what we should be doing now. But anyway, that's what it would be. Like that vulnerability of, there's a real like vulnerability of showing. It's almost like, don't tell me what you
yeah,
think. Don't tell me how you feel. Show me how
yeah.
you feel.
Yeah.
And that's what he's kind of doing, which is why I think he resonates. But I also think he has a very unusual way of being real.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. So, which made me, you know, it's really interesting. I wanted to know your thought about this. I never get to talk about comedy that much.
Casey didn't talk about comedy.
We didn't. We talked about girls. And then let me do one more station ID, and then I want to get back to you. There's one more question, and then we'll get right back to you, because that was the whole point of inviting you on here. You don't really want to be in the show.
I do. I do want to be in the show. Put me in the show, Ricky.
Okay.
I'm Lucy.
Thank God you were here because, you know, Sharon, I feel like I got to know you like in the first like five. I mean, we've seen each other around, but we never really hung out.
Correct.
So like in the first 5 minutes, the door was locked and Sharon was just like totally like calm me down. Like, like I was saying that, like, if there's ever a fire at UCB East,
there won't
be. I'm following
her. There won't be.
I'm following. But, okay, yeah, so thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's Dr. Lisa on Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm here with my fabulous, funny, and calming spirit, Sharon Spell. I have that in my mental block about
when you. I was on J-Date, my screen name was Spiel Magnolia.
J-Date, you're not Jewish, are you?
I'm J-adjacent. I'm not J, but Christian is J-adjacent.
Yeah, you like Jewish guys, though?
Sure. I'm dating a Jewish guy now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
I love him. We moved in together.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I want to hear about that, but let me just ask you this Amy Schumer question, and then we're going to move on. Because I got to get this off my chest.
Okay.
Okay. So Amy Schumer, you know, I did a project with a lot in 2010 that she was in, and I got to spend like an hour alone doing like a therapy type thing with her. So, and then after that, her career like totally skyrocketed. And so I was very ambivalent. She is polarizing.
Mm.
I was very ambivalent what I thought about her. And then when I went to see Julio and then I came home that night and I was watching her special, it happened to be on, I started thinking that I think she's maybe a little mainstream for my taste.
Hmm.
What do you think? Or, I mean, not that you know what my taste is, but what do you think of her? What does a comedian think of her? What does another female comedian think about her work?
I admire her. I'm glad for her success.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with it as other people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know how to answer it because, like, I know there's been controversies around her and decisions she's made about her show and writing staff, but I also feel like it's hard to be a woman in business and everything she does is going to be criticized. And I don't know enough about her to really.
So you
comment.
Actually probably know too much. You know, I mean,
I know too much about
gossip,
the behind the scenes.
You know all the gossip. I know there's gossip, and I'm aware of a little bit of it. But that was kind of liberating because.
But I totally wish her well because
I do
like
too.
It opens doors for more.
Women. Totally wish her well. That's what was partly confusing to me was my feeling about her as a person versus what I really thought about her work and what I thought about. How women wound up like, I think it does bother me a little bit that a lot of women. Well, I guess it's good and bad. She seems to have created like the next level of liberated women's comedy, but I wish that being sexually appealing to men wasn't the main focus of it. Maybe that's what I think.
And that's just something we have to live with. It's something we walk with
every
day.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about you. Therapy. So you're in you went through a big fucking, like, are you a different person now?
I'm
sort of.
I'm the same. My heart's healed. I'm the same, but my perspective is different. And, just to back to 2014, quitting drinking. Within like 2 months, the right information got to me to lead me to the Training Institute for Mental Health, TIMH. It almost looks like TMI, but it's TIMH.
Which was perfect.
But it's a training institute, and they work on sliding scale. There's an induction fee. It was like $35, something like that. And then because I was my only, you know, breadwinner in my family, me, I didn't have to pay it wasn't a crazy amount to pay for therapy. And also quitting drinking, I had more disposable income to spend on making myself healthier inside and out. And so that started the process of being in therapy. I'm not with that institute anymore. I have a therapist that I've been with for a year and a half, something like that.
Hmm.
And we're just now getting to like, some inner parts of the onion layers.
I know it is like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that but. I thought I was okay telling her a story yesterday in therapy and ended up just shattered saying the words.
Oh, you mean
it was one of those stories from childhood that you look at it some days you look at it like, what was that? That wasn't a big deal. And then some days it crushes you. And yesterday I thought I was telling her the story in a not a big deal way. And it just had me almost on the floor.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because it makes me think like maybe you in your own head were thinking of it in not a big deal way. And that when you actually looked at it, you were like, holy fuck.
Yeah. What was that about? Yeah. It was like that.
From what age was that story? Was
around 5.
Mm. Trauma years.
Yeah. Yeah. Where you don't have the capacity to process it at the time.
Yeah.
And you just walk with it through your childhood, your teens, mm-hmm. beyond.
So how did that make you feel? So in bringing that story to light, did it make you, was it like you got upset, obviously?
I got upset and then her buzzer went off and I'm still sobbing on the couch and I'm putting my coat on. I was like, I'll be okay. We're in Astoria. Everyone cries here in the street. It's not a big deal. And she's laughing. Like I told her early on, like I have a good sense of boundaries. I've done open mics for too many years to mention. And I said, like, all you need to do is like that buzzer goes off and I'll end on this. You know, and I'll like find my closer. I just like give me the light. Like, okay, so in conclusion,
you know what I'm observing about you. So I'm going to ask you a question really quick.
All right.
So I'm observing that you're like the host of your family. That you were the host of your family.
I don't know.
Is that true? There's my ego wanting to know. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have 2 brothers and a sister.
Are you the oldest?
I'm the baby.
The baby.
So I don't know that I'm the host.
But like the one who is like, everything's going to be okay.
I'm the showstopper more than the host.
Oh, you were the one.
Wah!
They're not performers?
No. The closest would be.
Well, let me say this.
Yes.
The most outgoing.
I might be the most outgoing.
Okay, there. I interrupted you.
But we all have different strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one closest who does the closest to what I do is my brother, Stephen, who is a minister.
Oh, wow.
And then my sister is an artist and graphic designer for like the state of Mississippi.
Oh,
and then my other brother works for the Treasury Department.
Oh, wow. So you're the, so there's
so I'm
creativity.
The baby.
Right.
Yeah. They're all creative and we're all funny. Is
right.
the thing.
Oh,
we
cool.
have different perspectives and like they're 11, 9, and 5 years older than I am. So we almost grew up in different households.
Right, right.
By the time I came along, my parents had kind of been there, done that.
So maybe there's a sense of calm in that, like
that we didn't have.
There were no like panics by the time. Were your parents like kind of over it by the time you? They were like, all right.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, except I guess maybe you wound up hiding a few things from yourself.
Because we didn't really talk about stuff, but like, I shouldn't say that. We talked about stuff, but there is a motto of don't embarrass the family that was ever present.
I could see that.
So a lot
of
things.
So you're poised. This is what we're saying. You're very poised.
Yes. I have poispus.
Oh, being poised is the best defense, without a doubt. I also want to point out that you're, because I do have a lot of visual artists listen to this, and that you're an accomplished visual artist also. And
yeah.
You've cartoon called...
It's called All the Rage. We're going to rename it, but the creators are Matt and Claudina Morrison, and they previously worked with the Onion News Network, and I met them through socializing people at the Onion years ago, and they wanted to start this cartoon, and we made 15 strips.
Then
we stopped production, and recently we've been talking about starting up again.
Oh.
So they just sent me storyboards like yesterday to start illustrations for new pieces. I'm very excited.
Oh,
like it's a new chapter.
Great.
I lived in Astoria for 10 years. I just moved to Brooklyn. Like we're starting the production of this stuff again.
I know a lot of comic book people too. If you want it, we could talk about it later. That's a nice community.
Yeah.
The comic book people. But so back to therapy and moving in with your boyfriend.
Yes.
So I don't want to miss this. I'm like, this is the most, you know, I was feeling so disjointed before all morning. And part of that is because I have this big show coming up, which I am supposed to also mention, Spring Break. And it's next. It starts on Tuesday through Monday, number 4, Times Square. And I'm going to be doing therapy on site and have work up there. So it's just made me so anxious that I'm having a hard time focusing because of my self-esteem issues. But anyway, I'm so stressed. But yeah. No, I forgot
that
about it.
That sounds normal.
Like when so you have come to the show.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I'm
all over the place. That's what I'm saying. It's okay. We're good. It's okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I was saying back to, because I'm all over the place and I really do want to hear the story. So, and now I'm worried that you think I'm all over the place.
Everybody is all over the place and it's normal and it's okay. And sometimes when I blurt too much, if that's what you feel like is happening, like when you feel like you're all over the place, like everybody feels that. And so I comfort myself by saying like, well, I'm showing somebody else that I also do this.
Yeah. I'm trying to be in the moment.
We're in the moment.
So,
and we're
right,
aware.
Is that what you're dealing with in therapy now though? Moving in with your boyfriend? When did that happen?
We essentially have lived together because I just kind of started moving in. He invited me to move in.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we've been dating 8 months.
And invited you to move in? That's so nice.
Very quickly, which set off some alarms in my head.
After how long?
Like a few months.
Ah.
But like he introduced me to his parents after 3 weeks.
Oh.
And it was, you know, I looked at that like, well, I'll get dinner. And I'll meet some new people and we'll see what happens.
Sure.
And they're lovely.
Yeah.
And I sat at that dinner table at the restaurant we were in and just thought, whose life am I in right now? I looked at it and I was like, but we fit so well.
The one you made.
Yeah. Yeah. By saying yes. Like I spent thousands of dollars on improv classes. If I'm not going to use it, you know, for my real life, what have I done? You know, but if I'm not going to agree to be in my own scene, then what have I learned? I said yes, and so I showed up, and I got dinner and a new family.
So you didn't trust that he was so enthusiastic about you so quickly?
It seemed odd, but also it was grounded in, like, I saw him in different environments being the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like he was performing for me to get me to move in with him and then dump me or whatever, you know, bait and switch kind of thing.
Right.
That has happened before and has that not I didn't
I
move
mean,
in
yeah,
with them,
know
but
that.
You know,
yeah.
Somebody
has he
comes
had
on.
Other long-term relationships?
Yes. He was married for 8 years.
Oh, okay.
And I was too.
Yeah.
And so by the time we reconnected, we knew each other years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then
oh,
we reconnected good. Last summer and ended up talking for 6 hours that night and went on our first date the next day. And he told me later by the end of that weekend, like just seeing each other over the course of the weekend, he knew.
Wow.
I know, right?
Wow.
It sounds crazy. But then like a few months later, he asked me to move in with him. And I said, yes, after 9 months.
Oh.
Yes. So that way we would get through the holidays. I could introduce him to my family. Like I wanted to wait enough time to see him over.
That's sensible.
And then like.
You're sensible.
I'm trying. You know, it's a practice.
No, yeah, you're sensible. I like that.
But I took him to meet my siblings, my family, and it seemed like he fit right in. It seemed very comfortable and easy. They laughed at the same things. Like we have the same sense of humor, you know?
Yeah.
Like a lot of wordplay, a lot of goofiness, you know?
You know, it reminds me of when I met my husband. I was 42 when I met him. And I'd, you know, been around the block. And I kept saying, I want to be with a man who's crazy about me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And he was very enthusiastic about me. And this is what your boyfriend sounds like, too.
Yeah.
It's an essential ingredient.
Yeah. That if you don't have that, it's like, why bother?
But so, I mean, all the guys I've been with were all very, like, I always felt like they were biding time until that fashion model came along. You know what I mean.
And I wanted somebody who's excited to be with me, because I was really excited to be with me, mm-hmm. to have my brain back and have control of my life more than in the past.
So,
and I wanted somebody who was on board with that and also was in control of his life and working on himself, which he is.
Right.
Yeah.
So, is he in therapy as well?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's doing great.
Yeah.
He was already like dealing with his stuff when I met him, actively working on himself, which was great.
So you must feel so, you must feel so like.
Well, it feels calm.
Calm.
Yeah.
That's great. See that?
It's joyful and
calm. See
that,
listeners? It's calm.
It doesn't feel like fireworks.
It's supposed to be like that, right?
It doesn't feel like
drama. Or like, oh my God, I'm so in love with you.
I feel like
that's
implied.
Not real. What?
I feel like that's implied that I don't have to say it because, like, I know I'm going home to him and I know who he's going to be when I go home. Like, I'm not going to walk into a, you know, minefield.
He's a stable guy.
Yeah.
That's what I went for.
Yeah.
Stability.
Yeah.
Because then, like, life is so unstable and exciting.
Absolutely.
As it is.
I don't want to come home and not know what I'm walking into.
But it also sounds like maybe part of the reason you were open to him is because you had done so much work on your own. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah. I got rid of my dating apps a few months before he and I reconnected.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone on some online dates, and it felt like filing. Like, it just felt like, you know, like office work.
Oh.
And not a career. You know, office work is to a career what online dating is to romance.
Right, right.
And just decided, I'm going to meet my person by living my best life, and if I don't meet my person, I'm still living my best life.
Wow.
So I just started going to party invitations, like accepting the invitations.
Right.
So he actually invited me to his birthday party, and I went. And when I showed up, he was like, "Wow, you're here." I was like, "Well, you invited me." And I had that moment of like, "Am I not supposed to be here? Was that a mistake? Did you accidentally
want to be in the show?"
What's
wrong with you?
And he said later, like, "No, I was just so glad and surprised and overwhelmed that you were there." But I took it in that, you know, that negative way first, of that insecure way of, wait, did you not want me here? Am I not supposed to? Okay. Because I went in.
I could see that. I mean, I could see anybody feeling that way. But
I went in thinking, like, at the very least, I'm going to go in.
Because you didn't know him very well anymore. It was like, I'm inviting the whole world.
He performed at UCB back when I worked in the tech booth in 2012.
Wow.
So parents had just died. I was bartending and working in tech booth and box office. And tech booth was really great because I could cry in public privately because it was a dark box and nobody saw me back there boohooing. And
wow.
Yeah. And I got paid.
You got paid to cry. What more do you want?
I was an okay tech, but I was an excellent crier anyway. But so I didn't know him, but I knew who he was from that. So that show ended. I stopped teching. We lost track of each other, and then he invited me to his party, and I thought, well, I'm going to walk in, and maybe I'll see people I know in addition to him. Maybe it's a bunch of couples. As far as I knew, he was still married. And thought, like, it's probably a bunch of couples, and I'll just walk in. I brought a Kind bar, and I thought, like, I'm going to present him with a Kind bar and say,
"That's sweet.
Thank you for inviting me to your party. I'd like to thank you in kind."
You had a joke.
I had a joke ready to go. And I thought I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if people start ignoring me, I'd just say, like, well, I have other places to go, and then just go home.
you know what's great about that for you people out there, what Sharon did, what the beauty of that is, she said yes to the invitation.
That's the thing.
And she went by herself. Like, she wasn't like, you said hello to life. You're like, I'm going, and I'm going by myself.
Yes.
And I think for some people it's a big stretch, but that ability or that pushing yourself to do that, it gets easier and easier the more you do it. I know it because I've spent so much time. People think I'm really outgoing, but I'm not. I'm really just that I've spent so much time alone.
It's a practice.
Going places alone.
And it doesn't happen overnight. You don't get comfortable in your skin overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a practice.
But I think it really serves all of us, especially women, because women need to, and men too. You know, men are really afraid to go to the movies alone a lot, I think. Did you ever notice that?
I don't know.
Yeah. Because, I think there's...
I don't go to the movies a lot. I go with my boyfriend. He loves to go to the movies. So I go with him, but I haven't really gone on my own.
Well, just make him tell him to stay home. See what it's like.
I mean, I go out to eat by myself.
Well, yeah, that's
harder. But that's kind of mandatory. Well, because I'm, like, after I leave here, I have time to kill before my show tonight, so I'm going to get something to eat somewhere.
Where's your show tonight?
It's at the UCB East Village.
Which...
It's Lasers in the Jungle.
Oh, that's
7:30.
Such a great show.
Yeah.
With Anya Garrett.
She has left the show, and now producing it is Carol Hartzell. And Sean Crespo and Katina Correa are still the hosts.
I love them. I mean, I love Katina.
Yeah. It's all a great group. Anya, Dan.
Yeah, Dan's left. Great. Are Dan and Anya still together?
They're still together, but they've left the show. But it's all amicable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
as far as I know. It's amicable.
We'll get him on here.
Yeah. Sure.
And I won't tell him. I'll just see what he has. Just trick him into talking. No, but that's a great group, and I bet the show does really well. It's a Thursday night. What time?
7:30.
7:30. Be there, folks.
So when people listen to this on the 24th and after, come to my other shows, not this one. But if you're listening today,
put a link up. So how long have you been living with your boyfriend now?
About 8 months.
Oh, right.
Well, like officially, I moved in last Friday. Like I hired,
but that's what I mean. But because that feel different? You moved your shit in and gave up your apartment. That's moving in, honey. I don't consider staying at somebody's apartment every night living there.
I had my own closet, plural.
Doesn't matter. I've had closets.
Right.
We
didn't
drawers,
pay bills together yet.
Closets.
We're just entering that realm of paying bills together.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
that's a whole other.
I know. And I've told him, like, I have anxiety about this from my previous relationship, like from my marriage.
Yeah,
I have issues with this.
Course.
And I'm like, I'm not going to do it elegantly, but we're going to work on it. And he was like, yeah, great. Whatever.
I love that. I love that. So. But, you know, it's weird. So you're trying to think it's not. Are you trying to think it's not any different? Or what do you think?
No, I would say because he gave me keys to his apartment almost immediately.
Right, right.
So I've been there for a long time. But I did change of address only in the last month.
Yeah.
And then last Friday, hired movers. Shout out to Sven Moving.
Oh, I've used them.
Yeah. Super easy, convenient, very nice.
They're great people.
Yeah.
We love them.
They complimented my packing.
I probably would too. I bet you're great.
Well, they gave instructions, and I love to follow the dadgum rules. So I just read what they suggested, and then it bam, bam, boom.
People like you make me look like shit.
No, you look great.
No, I mean like in packing. I don't mean physically.
Oh, no.
There's nothing you could do
about
that.
They were happy. Like it was. They were all contained enough.
No. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I did it perfectly, but my dishes are still intact.
That's wonderful.
So everybody worked together.
So I
moved in, and then yesterday, actually, I brought the last stuff from that closet from my bedroom there and left the keys to that apartment on the kitchen island, locked the door on my way out.
So I'm feeling you have no place to go when you get in that big fight.
I didn't know. Well, yesterday I kind of knew it was time to give the keys back. I paid through the end of the month. I still had wiggle room, but I'm like, what? You know, why not just get it done?
Yeah.
And then they can paint the room or they can, you know.
Let's not drag
sage
this
it
out.
Or whatever.
What
you
am
know?
I avoiding?
Yeah. So I just went ahead and did the move. Also, I bet like beginning and end of the month, it's harder to book movers.
Truth.
So I went ahead and did it middle of the month. And yeah, and just get it done. And... yeah, I walked out of there. And the thing that was the hardest wasn't leaving the physical room. It was saying goodbye to my landlords. Because I've known them for 10 years. I lived in the same apartment for almost a full decade, short of a few months, a full decade. And I wept and with their daughter. And I said, like, I almost just walked past this door. I had a card ready with my new address in it for them. And I said, I almost walked past the door because I didn't want to do this. I was like, but I don't avoid stuff. So...
wow.
You know, and I was like, maybe we'll hang out now more and see each other more than in the apartment, like more than in the building.
Wow.
It's like a 3-unit house,
yeah,
but they're all separate apartments.
Yeah, so you probably know them pretty
but the,
well.
But the landlords are on the second floor, their daughter's on the first floor, and then they have other family, other daughter, other family comes to visit. And that was the hard part. And it was just like, it's just time to move because I have a new life with my boyfriend and his family, and I love him and them. And
oh, that's so great.
It's just time.
That's so great.
We're building
so,
a life together. And
you
it's
feel
really nice.
Good. You felt, you feel like you're happy that you did it. I
yeah.
mean, you're not like having anxiety.
We have had fights. You mentioned that before, like there's nowhere to go. We have had fights and we worked through them.
Yeah.
Like even yesterday morning before I left to go on, you know, the closure journey. He had done something that was mindless, and I said to him, like, logically, I know you did not mean to do that, but I am mad at you, and I don't want to be mad at you.
You know what?
Like, that's how we fight now.
That is so, I don't want to say smart, because it's instincts, but, like, that is something that I am working on.
It's hard.
We are all working on in our group therapy.
Yeah.
And you people, like, when you get mad at, when I get mad at my husband, what you did is so beautiful because it's like, okay, I'm mad.
Yeah.
He didn't want to, you can't assume that he's evil.
I knew
he's
he didn't
not.
Mean to.
He made a mistake.
Yeah.
Tell him in a way that is loving that you're
yeah.
mad at him.
Yeah.
That's so great. You know, we only have 3 minutes left, so I want to ask this question.
Oh, okay.
First of all, you have made me feel so much better today.
Aww,
and I really had
I
a really
too.
Really anxious. I mean, this is just my mishigas. I'm on under pressure right now. It's normal, whatever. And I think that you have so much positive energy, and it's really, really great. It must be great for you. And I just want to know, before you went through everything that you went through, which is a lot, were you that positive? Or,
I was positive, but I was also in denial about the things that were broken, things that needed to be repaired. Like, I needed to not be in that marriage. I needed to have a better relationship with my parents. I needed to, like, there were things I needed to work on, but I wasn't able to do it. But I knew, like, ultimately, I would at some point, be able to address them, but not, it doesn't happen overnight.
So were you aware of it?
I was aware my marriage was not good.
No, like, but were you aware of, like, there must have been a lot of, or there must have been negativity. Like, I don't feel negativity, you know, or I don't feel depression, negativity. I get a very positive
but
feeling.
But I have that. I have it, and I walk with it, and I name it so I can categorize it and understand it.
Right. And in a way, that feels like strength, almost.
Maybe.
I think, you know, it doesn't, but I'm wondering if you were, I mean, I guess, you know, were you aware of, I mean, you were aware your marriage was bad, but I also think it must have been some other feelings or leftover stuff from your childhood. Were you aware of that? Were you thinking about, like, I shouldn't be doing this? I shouldn't be with this guy?
I was thinking that, and also thinking, like, marriage is hard, and my parents drilled into me, into my head from an early age, like, you get married and you don't get divorced. And they would brag about how each of their children was still married to the first spouse.
Ah, family pressure.
Yeah.
You had family pressure. Well, you know.
And it felt like I was breaking my parents' hearts, too, when I separated, but I couldn't live that way anymore. So.
Wow.
You got to speak your truth, and then it gets better.
Overcoming difficulties can really be, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely.
There. So I just want to say I've enjoyed having you on
so
much.
Thank you
and
for
I want
asking.
To make sure that everybody goes to your website, SharonSpell.com, and check out your cartoon, All the Rage.
But we're changing the name.
But you're changing. But check it out.
I'll put all the links on my website.
You
sorry. Yeah.
And thanks for listening. And come to spring break.